Good morning. It's good to see everyone this morning. We're especially thankful for the visitors that have come. We appreciate everyone's willingness to worship and put God first. And, you know, one of the things that's been on my mind a lot is some of the things that Colton talked about on Wednesday night. And my question then to you this morning is, what have you done this morning to prepare your minds and your heart to worship God? One of the things that we need to do is to constantly take stock of our commitment and our love for God and whether or not we are abiding by His will. This morning we're going to talk a little bit about the family. And there's a problem that seems to perpetually exist. That is, the devil is wanting to do whatever he can to cause us to compromise our faith. And when we look at the family, it should be based upon truth, absolute truth. And our approach must be much like what Jesus' approach to life and service and obedience to God. John 3:16 tells us that God so loved the world. Do you love the world like God loved the world? The thing that moved Jesus, for God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. Truth is the basis. In 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 through 17, it says this, it says, do not love the world. Do not love the world nor the things that are in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. The compromise is that we end up loving the world more than we love God. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away, and also its lusts. But the one who does the will of God abides forever. It is His will. When Jesus was talking to His disciples, talking to the Father, in John chapter 17 and verse 14, well, verse 13. But now I come to thee, and these things I speak in the world that they may, have my joy made full in themselves. I have given them thy word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I do not ask thee to take them out of the world, but to keep them from the evil one. And they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. So sanctify them in truth. Thy word is truth. The contrast that exists and that will always exist is between truth and error, between the world and the kingdom. They cannot coexist. And it seems as though we are ever and perpetually trying to figure out a way that they can coexist. And we can still love the world and love God at the same time. We are not to love the things that are of the world. And this morning we're going to mention several things that are part of the compromise in our families. But you see, if we follow what God says, then we will be victorious, not compromising at all what God has said. So we're going to look at some causes of compromise. The first thing is, after we talk about the temptation to sin, and if you look in James chapter 1, what you realize is that there is a progression that takes place. And we cannot afford to succumb to any of this. In verse 13 of James 1, it says, "Let no one say when you are tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself does not tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own flesh, own lust. Then when lust has conceived, he gives birth to sin, and when sin is accomplished or is full grown, it brings forth death." That's what happens. We need to understand what takes place in the minds and in the hearts of people. We cannot succumb to the lure of the world and the lure of temptation. We can't do that. Yes, it's progression. But we cannot think that we can come just as close as we possibly can to the things of this world and not have it affect us. Because it starts in the heart. That's why we are told to do everything to guard our hearts. So looking at the causes of temptation, the first one is the lure of materialism. The temptation to devalue the spiritual in family life. The lure of materialism. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, Paul writes to Timothy, and he tells him to warn the people about these things. In 1 Timothy 6, beginning in verse 7, it says, "For we have brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. And if we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and into a snare with many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge men into ruin and to destruction. For the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, and some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many a pang." Then if you skip down to verse 17, "Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be enticed or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous, to be ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold on that which is life indeed." Then he tells Timothy to guard what has been entrusted to you. Guard the faith. Guard the gospel. In Luke chapter 8, in Luke chapter 8 and verse 14, Luke 8 and verse 14, this is within the parable of the sower. Verse 14 says, "And the seed which was sown and fell among the thorns, these are the ones who have heard, and as they go on their way, they are choked with worries and riches and pleasures of this life." We cannot succumb to that. We cannot afford for that to take place. In Luke chapter 12, Luke chapter 12 and verse 15, he says, Jesus says, "Be on your guard against every form of greed, For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. Be careful. Because if you're not careful, we will be compromising with everything of this world. Materialism. And the thing about materialism is, it's not so much the possession, but it's an attitude of heart. It's something that creeps into us and it affects the way that we think. It's not just based on what we do or what we have and all the riches that we have amassed, but it has to do with our attitude. What is your mind thinking about? We need to be thinking about the Lord. A second thing. Is you look at continuous exposure to character-defiling influences through the mass media, entertainment, and through our friends. Be careful about your friends. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33 says, "Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals." Bad company. Choose your friends wisely. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, 2 Corinthians 6, beginning in verse 14, this is the warning. "Be not bound together with unbelievers. For what partnership hath righteousness and lawlessness, or what fellowship has light with darkness, or what harmony has Christ with Belial, or what has a believer in common with an unbeliever, or what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God, just as God said, 'I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people.' Therefore, come ye out from among them, and be ye separate, and touch no unclean thing." Be careful about your continuous and continuing exposure to character-defiling things in this world. It requires a constant vigilance on our part. A third thing is, with reference to our priorities, has a tendency to crowd out children from the busy life of parents. Parents have a tendency nowadays to put, and I think this has probably always been a problem, there is this temptation to put other things before your children, before the influence of the choices that you make has on your children. Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians 6 and verse 4. Says this, Ephesians 6 and verse 4, says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath or to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord." Some versions say, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That's our responsibility. We as parents end up living a very busy life. And sometimes we fail to order our priorities the way they should be. God is always first. Always. We put God first. Within the home, the hierarchy is God, your spouse, your children, and your vocation. Be careful that one does not crowd out the other. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, there is a warning. Paul in 1 Timothy 5 is talking about widows. He talks about older widows, and he talks about younger widows as well. In chapter 5 and verse 13, He's talking about young women remarrying. And he says that that's the wisest thing to do. If not, then they learn to be idle as they go about from house to house. Not merely idle, but also busybodies talking about things that are not proper. Therefore, I want younger widows to get married, bear children, keep house, and give the enemy no occasion for reproach. That's the key. Give the enemy no occasion for reproach. Fulfill the roles in which God has placed you. Make sure your priorities are sure and are true. And then a fourth thing. A fourth thing is that there's a moral decay that sweeps our nation. It causes many to compromise with the world. And they seem to be moving on a parallel line with the world. And at the same time, they do that, they're moving away from the truth of the gospel, of God's standard. We live in a culture in which evil is called good, and good is called evil. We can't afford to compromise. It's the problem that the children of Israel had. We cannot fall into the same temptations. 1 John 2, as we read earlier, said, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. Because everything in this world will not last, it's going to pass away. We need to be following something that we can rely on, which is God's word and the truth of the gospel. In Romans chapter 12, I want to look at the first two verses. Romans chapter 12. Essentially is the cure for compromise. I urge you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and a holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. The cure for compromise. The cure is always the truth. That's always the basis. Paul talks about the will of God. What he's writing and what he's saying, he's reminding Christians about who they are. He's reminding them about their relationship with God by the mercies of God. In other words, God's love and grace becomes the motivation for all obedience. The truth is the basis for what we do and how we live. There is an urgency in Paul's plea to the Roman Christians. What he says is, he said, I beseech you or I urge you. In other words, he is exhorting them at this point. His desire is, he's trying to entreat them that they will pray and that they will be what God wants them to be. Oftentimes, we do not place the same amount of urgency on things. And that's when we begin the compromise. We don't get it. That this is something that needs to be done now and forevermore. And we forget. This is also, he talks about a personal sacrifice. He says you are to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. A living sacrifice. What he's exhorting them to do is something that involves both the inner and the outer person, deep within our hearts, to present our bodies and to renew our mind. It requires a decision that we have to make daily, that we are going to commit ourselves to service to God, to present our bodies, renew our mind. He talks about a sacrifice, a spiritual one. He says, which is your spiritual service? This has to do with a daily dedication to glorify God in our lives every day. That's why it's so important that we understand when we come before God, that we come with before Him with a clean heart and clean hands, dedicated to service to Him every single day. This sacrifice that we are to make leads to a practical and radical decision in our lives. He says, be not fashioned, or rather be conformed. Do not be conformed according to this world. Be transformed. In other words, change. That's what must take place. There must be a change in our hearts, a change in our lives. Over in Philippians chapter 1. And verse 27, Paul reminds these Christians, he says, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or remain absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. Change will take place in your mind and in your heart. In Galatians chapter 2. In Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20. Paul says, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and delivered himself up for me. Be transformed. Be changed. That's the challenge that we have. So how do we put this into practice? He talks about the renewing of your mind in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. 2 Corinthians 10 beginning in verse 3. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. The battleground is the mind. That's the challenge. The renewing of our mind takes place through the application of God's will in our lives. So what about your life? What about your family? When you look at your family, have you made every effort to avoid compromise with the world? If you have not, it's time to take stock. I would leave you with this. It was a poem entitled, Make the Ordinary Come Alive. Do not ask your children to strive for extraordinary lives. Such striving may seem admirable, but it is a way of foolishness. Help them instead to find the wonder and the marvel of an ordinary life. Show them the joy of tasting tomatoes and apples and pears. Show them how to cry when pets and people die. Show them the infinite pleasure in the touch of a hand. And make the ordinary come alive for them. The extraordinary will take care of itself. Make it come alive. That's our job as parents. They need to see it in us. They need to see our dedication. They need to see our change that has taken place. They need to see us worship God. They need to see us standing firm for the truth and avoiding any kind of compromise. And every time we have an opportunity as parents to explain to them the reason we're not doing things because it would result in compromising the truth, then we need to make sure that they get it. Teach them. Teach me thy way, O Lord. There is power in standing firm for the truth. We need our children to see that in us, in everything that we do. Jesus died for us. Jesus avoided compromise at all costs. He went to the cross for us. He's not asking us to do anything other than what he did. For us to sacrifice our lives and our hearts daily for him. But it starts with the ultimate commitment of giving yourself to Christ. It's one of the things in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 that Paul points out to the Corinthians, talking about giving. And he talked to them about the fact that they first would give their lives to God and then to him. Jesus died for you and for me. Jesus made it possible. And for us to not just live eternally with him, but he has, and then the point is not that he died for us to go to heaven. He died for us so we could be redeemed. It's like the song that we sing, redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. That's what Jesus is asking. Come to him. Tonight, this morning, rather, you have an opportunity to come to Jesus, to be baptized into his name, to begin walking according to his truth. And as children of God, we have an opportunity, if we are struggling, to enlist the help of our brothers and sisters in Christ in praying for you. So whatever your need, won't you come while we stand and sing?